Who are you and why are you here?
Will from Tool Bicycle, right on Tool. Here to enjoy the heart of frame building, really, just having a good time. Meeting these, we're all buzzing and we're all weird people buzzing on the same buzz of making bicycles, so it's a good place to be.
That's probably the truest statement I've said all weekend. Obviously, first question, where are you from?
From Quebec in Canada, from Mont-Saint-Anne, where we've been used to, where we host the World Cup for 30 years.
Yeah, I hear they have a nice, easy, gentle slope there.
Yeah, really, like, beginner-friendly, and no roots, no rock, really grippy, not slippery at all.
Never wet.
Yeah, never. Yeah.
You've got here, I think, one of the only machined bikes from the show, and it's looking fairly nice. How would you describe this project?
Shit ton of work. And basically the idea at the start was to, I was really into process. I'm an engineer and wanted to make a bike locally as environmental friendly as possible. So we did this thing with we have one piece of aluminum, one machine, one shop. Material comes in, a bike comes out. So it's really simple and straightforward. So yeah, that was the idea. Try to do a bike locally, a bike that stands out, a bike that looks good, that rides good, and that is it's aluminum, so you can reshape it into aluminum at the end of the life cycle. So yeah, that was pretty much the idea.
It's a fully recyclable platform.
Yeah.
So obviously it's a heavy enduro or maybe downhill type of chassis?
Yeah, it's a big, small bike, I'd like to say.
Okay.
It's 150, 160. So yeah, it pedals like a charm. It's low travel, but the high pivot makes it it can handle anything you throw at it. So yeah, it's kind of, I would say, hard, heavy-duty trail bike. Yeah.
Okay. Now, you said you're an engineer. What is that, your day job outside of this? Or you trained as an engineer and you left school and you bought a machine and this is what you do?
Yeah, I was an engineer at school, wanted to work in the bike industry. My, end of the university project was making a bike, so we bounded it and stuff, and then I was trying to get a job on the bicycle industry, couldn't make it. My teacher was let's make a master and keep making bikes. So I enrolled into the master, then I got a job as a consultant engineer for 2 years, and then now I left all that and I'm fully focusing on this project.
So what, engineering-wise, what is your native CAD platform?
This whole bike was designed in Siemens NX, but and we're doing all the manufacturing in Siemens, but now we're slowly moving into SolidWorks for design, but we're keeping NX for finite element analysis and also for CAD, CAM modeling and all that programming.
So why the shift to SolidWorks if you're already in a Siemens environment? What are you seeing as being the goal there?
Making it work, because it's really expensive to be on these big software platform. So SolidWorks is a little more accessible. So we're trying to pick the elements that are really things we need, and we can use SolidWorks for modeling, but we need certain aspect of NX for the manufacturing side and the simulation side. So we're keeping these tools that we need, but trying to save money on the modeling because we can do it in SolidWorks.
And so with Siemens as a platform, you're able to separate that out and still have it and get the value where you want the value.
That was the whole thing. With the university, we have the chance to have access to a bunch of software. So it was throughout, it was all testing and finding the right element that we need, and we cannot find any other alternative. So now we're putting our money where it counts and try to make it work in like our small budget. So yeah, it's a lot of work to change between platform, but it's like a way that we found that we could make it work out of. So yeah.
Okay. And then for cam, you said you're using Siemens as well.
Yeah.
Just straight in NX.
Yeah, straight in NX manufacturing environment. Yeah, it's really good for like 3D like machining and like the toolpath here. We can really fine tune it and really love the way it works. It's efficient. Yeah.
But that's primarily a three-axis environment.
Yeah, yeah. That's the whole thing. Like we optimize the design to be able to use as much as the material as possible. So you can see here on photo, like the rear end fits inside the front end. So this way we use as much as the material as we can, and like it's really we try to simplify it as much as we can. So it's like big, simple three-axis machine. Two up, we do the full bike. So it's really like trying to get the cost as low as possible by brain juice, trying to make like complex stuff out of simple machinery. Yeah.
And like how many ops are for like say the one side of the front and maybe one side of the rear? How many operations are you doing on the mill?
They all fit in the same plate. So it's up one first side, up two second side, and then we have another up for the swing arms that we need to do on both sides, and there's no other up to do on the front end.
Yeah. So the front's basically a two-op setup.
Yeah, and then it's just for like the axle and the bearing housing that needs another up for the rear end. Yeah.
What was the biggest challenge you think you had on an engineering or manufacturing level getting this, you know, to a point where you're fine-tuning bicycle design rather than simply the engineering and the manufacturing part of it?
Like bonding is the hardest part. Like that's why there's not many people doing it. It's new, and like the whole industry and the test standards are like not really, they don't really work with that kind of manufacturing. So we have our old test lab at the shop, so we can test the bike for all the test standards, and like the bike is passing the test, but we managed to break it on the field. So like it's kind of working our way to designing our own test standard to make sure that things are okay. So really the bounding is the hardest part. It's really like...
And then what particularly makes it hard?
We're bounding a bike and it's really thin shell. Like we want to have a lightweight bike, so it's really...
Is it just that there's very little surface area for the bond?
Yeah, we're fighting for it and like trying to get every area reachable with three axis. So really...
So if you had a five axis, you'd be able to undercut things and actually build up a larger surface for the bond itself.
We're actually playing with undercuts at the moment and like finding ways. Like we have a really creative team at the shop where we do this, like really experienced machinists, and we're really using like custom made tool to reach areas and stuff. So it's really finding a way that like makes sense in terms of cycle time and like balancing all this to get something that will be like repeatable, like really something we can trust, and yeah, something that would be the way we want it, and we're pretty picky, so yeah.
Look at it this, you need a fairly big machine to cut this out, obviously, especially if you're trying to do both front and rear out of the same piece and everything like that. So it's a very big machine. You just mentioned that you're at another shop leveraging their professionalism. You're basically doing computer work, but the metal cutting is done at a full real machine shop type of place, or is it done at your university?
I'm doing everything, but we're hosted by a shop. It's one of my friends, which is my partner in the project, and like they just say, hey guys, just come and do the bike at our shop. So I'm running the machine. It's their machine, and I actually now I'm working there, so I spend all my time there. They're helping us, we're helping them, so I'm doing design work for them and trying to get the production more efficient, so this way we get free time on the machine so we can machine more and make more prototypes. So it's kind of a good synergy there. And yeah, it's really, I'm not a machinist, I learn everything I know now because of this project. I learned by doing, and I get good mentors that these guys have a lot of experience, and it's good to be there and just evolving with them, and they're really helping me. Yeah, things are going great, and like we get the cycle time down, the finished product, like the surface finish, which is really hard to achieve with this alloy, is getting better because of these guys that are really warriors. They know what they're doing, and they're.
Can you say what alloy you're using?
It's 6061. It was okay. Really important for us to use that one. We believe like it's not as strong as 7075, but like there's no bad material, there's just bad design. You can take into account, this is something we know, we can take into account in the design and make something that will work, but it's really more corrosion resistant than the 7000 series, which that you can do anything. So it's really in the long run, we believe that 6061 is a better alloy in terms of like durability. And yeah, so we believe we can make it happen with 6061.
Now, when you're taking all this stuff out of one plate, are you seeing significant, since so little material is left when you're done,
yeah.
Are you seeing significant distortion because of that? You know, the built-in stresses of the material coming out and affecting what you've got coming off? And how are you correcting for that or dealing with that?
Yeah, the thing is we've been working with a lot of suppliers. Now we're working with a North American supplier that all the material we're using is out of U.S. mill. So this material, domestic material, is really high grade. So we have less distortion using this material, and it's all about the fixturing, the way we attach the plate, and the way we like constrain it. We are playing with that, and the tightening torque has a lot of effect, so we're playing with that. And then like we benchmark our adhesive, and we know what it can handle in terms of like creep stress, so we're really working with that to make sure we're not over this limit. So the process can take a little bit of that like internal stress, so we're just trying to keep it in the margin, the acceptable margin. Yeah.
Okay. Now what, like, we're looking at this, I don't know, where are you in your development of this? Is this bike one, bike two, bike three?
Bike five, actually.
Bike five, which is your first rideable bike that was, you could say, this is a real bike now?
We rode all of them. The second bike lasted the full summer. So, yeah, the second iteration was a good one. Since then, like, we're really pushing it and putting it like on the test bench, doing lab testing and fatigue testing. So yeah, it's really, and like all the bike manufacturing, like manufactured in Asia, like you need to build a bunch and break a bunch before you can really like really get all of the complexity. So we're really trying to make more and just like see like getting a bigger
sample set.
Yeah, to be able to say like out of 10 bike we did that. So yeah, but again, small team, like the resources are limited, so we're doing our best to like go as quick as we can, but like we got no agenda. That's the beauty of the project. Like we just want to do a product that we would want to ride, own, and keep, and like we don't have any owners like pushing to get sales. We're like the product, we're really a product driven company, so we want it to be how we want it to be before we get to market.
Well, certainly this, I don't think any engineer has ever said they have all the time and money they need.
Yeah, of course, but yeah, it's kind of, in this project, it's always been this way. We work with what we have, and like, it's not like we were going like full blast with full money and then we got no money left. Like, we started with no money, so we're kind of, this is our vibe and this is the way we work.
Okay, you'll build another prototype when you save up enough pennies.
Yeah, it's, yeah, basically, yeah, it's just, it's more the time. Like, we spend a lot of time, like, we like riding, so we want to have bikes to ride, but then we need to, like, skip that part and just go straight to machine testing. So this is like we break bikes faster using machine testing. So yeah, this helps us a lot to get better at it. So yeah, it's really balancing like having fun on the trails with our bikes, testing our bikes, and just getting the process better and yeah, closer to market.
And from a design standpoint, what are you hope like you have you're here right now, but like where what are you hoping to do on the next version or two in terms of evolving what you're doing? What might change?
In terms of geometry, we're really stoked on how it rides. It's really perfect. We're fine-tuning the kinematics, and then we're already thinking about like other models. We would want to go like shorter travel because the like the high pivot really has its effect. And this like it's a 150, but it's such a big bike. We would want something a little like less travel. But
yeah, 150s aren't fun unless you're really pointing downhill.
Yeah, they're fun. It's really fun bike.
Right, right. But it's just they can suck a little out of you when you're doing a lot of more covering ground.
Yeah, but that's why we're fine tuning the kinematics, because the curve has a lot of effect on how the bike rides with this kind of bike, because it's growing and like you really want to have mid stroke support, and that's what we're working on. Yeah.
Sure. From a geometry point of view, you haven't posted your geometry here. How do I know what the bike is?
Yeah, you just ask. We're here for that.
That's a really efficient system if you think about it. If you want to know the geometry, there's one guy you can ask, right?
So, yeah, the geometry is pretty modern. Like, we got slag bike. It's right now it's 62 and a half head angle. Really steep seat tube, 78. It's long reach, it's 500, yeah. High stack. Like we try to keep the rear end as short as possible because it's growing about like 3/4 of an inch. So we always measure everything at sag because high pivot is kind of weird. So at sag, it's 454, the rear end. So yeah, trying to keep things as short as possible. There's mullet option just by changing one link. So you can get the bike to be a mullet. And yeah, without changing the geo. Right now it's 150, 160, but I usually run it 170 at the front, which makes it, say, 62 at angle. Yeah, so that's why we got such a low standover, because having like this slack bike, when you're turning in tight corners, it's cool because you can lean without like having to worry about the top two being in the way.
So I'm a firm believer in that. I mean, yeah. That's my red bike over there.
Yeah. So that's the thing. Like low standover is key for us, and trying to the shock is vertical and like as close to the seat tube as possible to like clear out and leave room.
Yeah, the seat tower makes me think of an Uno.
Uno, yeah. Yeah, that's, yeah, but we're trying to get, like, yeah.
I mean, they're totally different bikes, I get it. It's just reminiscent of how Uno's been doing their seat towers.
It's like big sport and, like, kind of the gusset mentality, just more shaped, and, yeah, we're trying to, yeah, all the linkage, and, like, in terms of design, trying to keep things simple, but, yeah, we cannot resist adding some little, like, detail and, like, some fancy, like, forms, but we're trying to keep it as simple as we can. And like the whole linkage, we call it the hidden link, because like you can't see nothing, it's just like hidden in the frame, so you just focus on the ride. And
right, the only thing that gets to see it is mud, right?
Yeah. Yeah, but like we got this big
You got a fender on the back.
Like, yeah, it's pretty good actually, and like when we designed it, we knew it. So
have you ever been on one of those bikes that a rock drops into the links and jams everything up?
Never happened, and like it can't really happen because there is not enough, and the way it as it compresses, everything lifts up, and like we have a 2-degree angle on the base of it, so like water is always flushing down and nothing gets returned.
Can't argue with 2 degrees, right?
Yeah, but 2 degrees is actually like in sewer pipes and stuff, like for your toilet at home. Like the guys on this job site, they're reaching for 2 degrees. This 2 degrees is like the best thing so that the hot stuff and the wet stuff will flow.
But a domestic and industrial building or residential building doesn't change its position in space too often.
Yeah, we knew it was like, but like we had some other plan, like we could get a full hole with, so we wouldn't have a bottom at it, but so far we didn't have any issue. Like we've been running the same for all the prototypes, some parts have been just reused, and like we have no break, like nothing has broken, we have no trouble.
Okay.
So yeah.
What's your front and rear spacing on this?
Front and rear spacing? Oh yeah,
it's crank shell and rear hub spacing.
It's a boost 148. Yeah, and the regular boost chain line. We're playing a bit with the idler position because like we're trying to get as much efficiency as we can. So we're like tricking the chain line a little bit on the idler. Uh-huh. And yeah, apart from that, it's pretty, like we have a chain guide on there, but I've been riding it for a month without it, and it's...
And you don't have a chain device on this. Typically on a design, especially a fairly high pivot like this, chain tension and tension is a big problem.
Yeah.
And you don't have a device on the bottom.
We don't need one, actually. Like, the first thing we do every time we assemble the bike is just get on the hardest gear and go up the steepest hill, like just cranking the shit out of the bike, and it doesn't skip, doesn't do anything, and like we get big guys on there that can really put a lot of torque on it, and if it doesn't skip and we cannot make it skip, like why putting a chain device? It's just there's enough drag as it is. So yeah, chain wrap was really a concern, but it's working well, so yeah.
Right, yeah. Well, great. I look forward to your future developments. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Sorry.